Invite you to turn your Bibles and turn along with us as we study yet another portion of God's Word. We were talking this morning about one aspect that children have about claiming that things are not fair. And there's another aspect I wanted us to think about, and that is what we teach our children. What do we tell them about lying, cheating, and stealing? Now, most of us would be confident that our children understand that these things are wrong. But are you certain? Because sometimes we end up sending mixed messages. One very perceptive mother sent me three examples from her life that caused her to stop and wonder what she was teaching her children. It wasn't the words she was saying. What got her concerned was the example that she was giving. And I use this as a means of looking at this. One of the examples she stated, she says, I have a son who has a disability and is expected to live to his early 20s. I'm trying to get him Social Security and Medicaid benefits, but last year I was denied because I had $2,000 in the savings account. Savings to pay our property taxes. The amount I had saved caused Social Security to deny my request. I no longer had that account, and I'm trying again this year. My son's doctors told me to lie on the paperwork and pretend he is the only one living in the house. They said I had to beat the system somehow. My son really needs to get Social Security and Medicaid. We have no insurance. We can't afford his medical needs on our own. Now, this was, of course, several years ago. I know the insurance and all that stuff has changed quite a bit. But that was the situation she found herself in. The son's doctors were basically prescribing to a mistaken philosophy that basically ends justify the means. But it's a philosophy that God doesn't approve of. Take a look at Romans chapter 3. In Romans chapter 3, and starting with verse 7, but if through my lie the truth of God abounds to his glory, why am I still being judged as a sinner? And why not say, as we are slanderously reported, and some claim that we say, let us do evil that good may come? Their condemnation is just. Sinful conduct doesn't produce good results. A lie doesn't improve any situation. Think about it. What happened if this woman did lie? Even if she received the funds, would she find peace in her life? But we also have to understand, accounts are audited. People do check once in a while. Would she be better off if her lie was discovered? See, sins have a way of not staying hidden. That's what Moses warned. In Numbers 32, and in verse 23, Moses said, if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. But then we also have to examine our purpose in lying. I'm certain the extra funds would relieve a huge burden off the shoulders of his family. But the temporary comfort, is that going to be worth going against God? Because we know that liars don't go to heaven. Take a look at Revelation chapter 21. Revelation 21 and verse 7. He overcomes will inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. This is one of the points we were making this morning. We got to think about the long term. What are the consequences of doing certain actions? God, we're told, cannot lie. In Titus chapter 1 and in verse 5, it says, in hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, promised long ages ago. God is unable to lie. It's against his nature. And if God cannot lie, then we who are followers of God also must bind ourselves to not lying. Our goal should be to please God. That's what Paul talked about in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10. When he said, "For am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I still striving to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ." Lying comes from Satan. Jesus called Satan the father of lies. In John chapter 8. John chapter 8 and in verse 44. "You are of your father the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He has been a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature. For he is a liar and the father of lies." Just as God's nature is he cannot lie, Satan's nature is that he tells lies all the time. It's Satan who makes it appear that a solution to the problem is a lie. That's what James warns in James chapter 1. James chapter 1. And starting with verse 13. "Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I'm being tempted by God.' For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust. And then when that lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when that sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren." Don't lie to yourself about where temptation comes from. It comes from our own desires. It comes from the temptations that Satan places before us. God himself does not tempt, but he does provide a way out of temptation. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13, "No temptation has overtaken you, but such is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape so that you will be able to endure it." If we face a prospect of having to break God's law, then we have to conclude that Satan has us deceived. If we're facing something thinking, "Well, I have to break a law." No, that's never true. We're overlooking the escape route. It's there. We just got to open our eyes. In this case, the money being saved up for taxes appeared to be the problem. The government doesn't know that the money's earmarked for taxes, nor is it trusting enough to say that you will actually spend the money on taxes. So the solution actually is pay the taxes early. Yes, you'll lose a small amount of interest, but there will be no question as to what the money's purpose was and where it went. Now that the funds are gone, they would eventually have been gone anyway, she can apply again. Then no lies have been made. If anything, honesty was then demonstrated. Take a look at 2 Corinthians. Chapter 8. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 21. For we regard what is honorable not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. We do things above board, honest, so that even people will look at it and say, yeah, that's the honest way to do something. There's another example she gave. She said, I'm taking a night class, and all our quizzes and tests are open book, meaning I can look up all the answers from the book. Those of us who are a little older remember how much trouble we would be in if we were caught cheating. It feels like cheating to me. Besides, how much will I learn this way? I need this class for a job to help with our finances. I could pass the class with a higher grade if I looked up the answers in the book. Now, I found this one interesting because I teach college courses, and I generally give open book, open note tests. Since my courses are business related, I figure it's more important for people to know where the information is located than whether they know it, can expect them to retain every scrap of knowledge in their memory. I do warn students that they'll need to know the material, because if they expect to look up every answer, well, they'll never complete the test in a lot of time. Instead, they should be able to answer most of the questions from memory. And for those that can't, then they should know their material well enough to be able to quickly locate the answer in the book or in their notes. That's the way I usually run my classes. So is that cheating? Well, first, it's not cheating because you're following the instructor's directions. That is the rules for that class. Second, is not cheating because the same rules are being applied to every one of the students. When we say someone's cheated, we're saying that justice is not being carried out, that the playing field is not level, that some players are given an advantage over others. See, God told merchants in Israel that they need to deal honestly. Take a look at Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19 and verse 36. You shall have just balances, just weights, a just ephod, and a just hin. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. You're supposed to use the same weights, measures, measuring cups, whatever volume that you use. They should be consistent. God didn't set what he thought would be a fair price for products. He didn't say, okay, you can only sell your wheat for this amount of money. He allowed the merchants to set any price they desired. But he did demand that the transaction be fair. If a person was buying a hin of wheat, then that person should receive precisely a hin of wheat. That's what's fair. That's what's just. If you went to a grocery store and found an incredible bargain on the cereal aisle, would you walk by because you believe the price was set too low? I can't buy that. That's too cheap. I think it's the other way around, isn't it? But that's what this person is saying about the course. I think the course is too easy, so I'm changing the rules for myself. Now think about it from an employer's viewpoint. Given two people who have taken the same course, one made an A and another made a B, which one would the employer hire if everything else was the same? Well, they'd probably pick the one that got the higher grade. Because wouldn't the employer assume that if the same course was been taken, then both received grades under the same rules? Would he wonder, well, if student B, the B student, only got the B because he made the course harder for himself? No. Now, if the employer knew that this was a case, he probably still wouldn't hire the person. Who wants an employee that makes work harder just for the challenge of it? Works hard enough. What a way to ruin productivity. See, justice requires equality in the requirements. Hiring relatives is called cronyism because it appears that the candidate for the job is not measured equally. You took somebody you knew. You took family instead of looking at people's actual qualifications. And this is one of the reasons that in the matter of salvation, God emphasizes his fairness. Take a look at Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. And in verse 23. I was having trouble getting my Bible to flip the right number of pages. Colossians 3, verse 23. Whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. For he who does wrong will receive the consequence of wrong which he has done, and that without partiality. If someone's cheating on the job, God says, I'm going to take care of that. I'm not going to give Christians or people that call themselves Christians a pass. Everyone's going to be judged the same. Over in Romans chapter 2, Romans chapter 2 and verse 11, it just simply says, for there is no partiality with God. And justice in our dealing with our fellow men doesn't mean we won't make judgments, but that we will strive to eliminate the bias in our judgments. We got to make judgments all the time. In James chapter 2, James chapter 2 and verse 9. But if you show partiality, you are committing sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. It's not that we don't make judgments. We just have to be unbiased in our judgments. The rich and powerful don't get better treatment than the poor. That was part of what the law said in the Old Testament. In Leviticus 19 and in verse 15, you shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor defer to the great. You are to judge your neighbor fairly. And I like this, the way this is worded. Notice that you don't give bias, you don't give preference to the poor either. Everybody thinks the rich get the preference. But the law here makes it clear. You don't give the rich preference, nor do you give the poor preference. You don't make up for injustice by going the other way. And that's something that our country's got to learn. Way too often, people think that the way to make up for past injustice is make present injustice. It does not work. You know, when leaders in the church sinned, even the apostle of Christ, Paul didn't let the people who were involved dissuade him from doing what was right. Take a look at in Galatians. Galatians chapter 2, and starting with verse 4. But it was because of false brethren, secretly brought in, who sneaked in to spy out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus, in order to bring us into bondage. But we did not yield in subjection to them for even an hour, so that the truth of the gospel will remain with you. But from those who were of high reputation, what they were makes no difference to me. God shows no partiality. Well, to those who were of reputation contributed nothing to me. But on the contrary, seeing that I have been entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been to the circumcised, and he goes on and jump down to verse 11. He says, but when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. He goes on to explain that Peter got involved following after these false teachers. He would not eat with brethren who were uncircumcised. He started playing partiality, and Paul stood up to him. Even though he was a fellow apostle, it didn't matter. He was in the wrong. So in this particular example, there was no cheating. There's no injustice being committed. She's just making life harder for herself. But here's another example. I was at a grocery store's gas station where using the store's card gives you a 3 cent per gallon discount. One day when I used the card, I received an 8 cent per gallon discount. My daughter and I grinned about the great deal we were receiving because of the store's mistake. I'm sure we all try and save every penny we can, but should we at someone else's mistake? Now again, step back and think about this. First, she should make sure the situation is truly what she described. Because Ye has discount cards for various gas stations, and I've used them. And sometimes the store adds extra discounts as bonuses for purchases at the store. But just let's assume somebody did make a mistake somewhere. What would be the fair and honest thing to do? Let's go back to that point we made about equity, that everything's fair and everything's the same. So let's turn the situation around. What if instead of an extra discount, you received less of a discount than you were supposed to? What would you do? Well, most people would probably quickly bring the shortfall to a clerk's attention. If that's the right thing to do, should it also be the right thing when the scales tilt in our favor? You know, once a mistake is pointed out, the response is then up to the clerk to decide how to handle the problem. Some will thank you and make a correction. Some will consider good customer relations to say, I made a mistake, so don't worry about it. A few don't care about their employer and will be annoyed that you were making them look bad and holding up their line. Whatever the decision, you should do the right thing by letting them decide how to handle the problem. You see, we got to do what's right, sometimes even to our own hurt. In Psalms 15, and in verse 4, in whose eyes a reprobate is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord? He swears to his own hurt and does not change. He does not put out his money at interest, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things will never be shaken. We need to be consistent. Even if my consistency sometimes doesn't get me as big of bargains as I might like. Because riches don't save if we sin. In Proverbs chapter 11 and in verse 4, it says, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. And as Jesus pointed out in Matthew 16, Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Now, in this particular case, I don't think there was a mistake made. I think she made a mistake not knowing how much was the discount. But I can pull a couple examples from my life. Not try to make it look as the proper thing, but here's a couple examples I had or happened to me. I remember quite a few years ago, a bank clerk once accidentally added $3,000 to one of my deposits. Oops. I didn't look at the receipt until I got home. But I turned around and immediately ran back to the bank and stood in her line to let her know. And now she acted as if it was not a big deal, and she corrected the transaction. And I understand, that, in the day's processing, they probably would have caught it and corrected it. Somebody should have somewhere. But you know what? She remembered me for the next 3 years that she worked at that bank. She knew my name every time I walked in. Because I saved her from embarrassment and having a mistake on her accounts. It's a small act, but it helped me get a little bit friendlier with somebody in town. There was another time that I was paying off a loan that was being handled by automatic payments. And I noticed on the last payment that the last payment was short 15 cents. They made a mistake. And they were dividing it up. They were off by 15 cents. Now, the mistake was done by the loan company when they were dividing up the loan. In order to get equal size payments, their calculations made a rounding error. I spent an hour or two running all over town, literally, trying to find the proper department in this big company so I could pay the 15 cents on time. And though I owed the 15 cents, the clerk went into the computer records, cleared the charges because he felt, well, we made the mistake. Why do you need to pay this? And I'm sure he's shaking his head at my spending so much time just to pay 15 cents. But from my point of view, that's what I wanted my children to remember. If you look at the world, everybody in the world expects to profit from other people's mistakes. But we need to let our light shine in this dark world by doing what's not expected. Take a look at Luke chapter 6. In Luke chapter 6 and in verse 30, give to everyone who asks of you, and whoever takes away what is yours, do not demand it back. Treat others the same way you want them to treat you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those who you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even the bank sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good, lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you'll be sons of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to the ungrateful and evil men. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. See, being a Christian is not about the big decisions all the time that we make. The little things that we do show our mindset. Again in Luke, take a look at Luke 16 and in verse 10. Jesus in this parable says, "He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. Yeah, a lot of these things are just, they're just little minor things. But they reflect how we act. They reflect on our character. And it's good for each of us to examine our lives to see if we are the Lord's. Take a look at Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, starting with verse 3. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But each one must examine his own work. Then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to another. For each one will bear his own load. I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here tonight who is not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are our children of God, we'd like the prayers of your brethren on your behalf. Again, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.